Blessings. I hope everybody's having a good day today. This is Reverend Mutshekumetetep Maati. The show is Ashe here on Akeru New African Network. Now, I always talk about how important it is to have your own sense of style, your own, embracing your own uniqueness. And if you're able to find a way to do that and to bring our African culture into it at the same time, then you're really on to something. And we have a lot of brothers and sisters who say that they really want to do the Africana thing, but they're a little bit leery about doing it because of the fact that they're in certain job environments where there are certain restrictions, or even just because of the fact that it's something that is completely new to them. Well, I came across a sister who is answering all of these questions in the solution of her designs. Sister is Nefa Amina Afia, and her business is called Simply Nefa Holistic Boutique. How are you today, sister?
Blessed. How are you?
I'm blessed as well.
Good. Thanks.
I have to tell everybody, when I saw her clothes, I said, you know what, this is so much like me. You know, I mean, there's just a wonderful uniqueness in the design, yet there's a simplicity at the same time, and it's chic, it's upbeat. It's got the African influence, yet it's crossover. Why don't you tell us about what inspired you to start designing in this way?
There was a need out there, stemming from myself, actually. I started embracing my culture back in 91, 90, somewhere around there, where we started to see the whole grassroots and African Afrocentricity kind of flourish itself again, or reflourish again. And I was doing traditional African pieces at that time, but the same pieces that I was doing and creating were not the same pieces that I myself was actually wearing, because at the time I was going to school, and I was also still intertwined with corporate America. But I wanted to embrace my culture, and so I started developing a more contemporary style that allowed us to be a reflection of our culture, but at the same time kind of fit in to the lifestyle and to the arenas and environments that we here in America found ourselves in.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is what kind of motivated me and pivoted me to create a line that was contemporary Afrocentric.
You know, I've been using the term New African as far as describing who we are, how we express ourselves to be in this country, and your line, it absolutely is New African.
Yes, it's another terminology definitely that would fit,
mm-hmm.
that would fit appropriately.
Who is it that is your client base?
I would say predominantly African-American woman, a woman of the diaspora here in the States.
Mm-hmm.
There is definitely a market within the European nationality, so to say, because to them it's more eclectic, eccentric,
mm-hmm.
but they're still leery, you know. But as we see more and more European designers kind of quote-unquote jump on the bandwagon of Afrocentricity, or even the eccentricity of us,
mm-hmm.
Africans, we see more and more of it intertwined in their lines and things like that.
Mm-hmm,
so, but predominantly still, it's us. It's African-American woman, aged, I would say, late 20s up into the 70s. I have a large market when it comes to the clientele, the woman. But I target right now, I'm targeting the younger sisters, because that's where this change in dress and this dismantling of what is sexy or sensual or hip really needs to be targeted. That's where the most of the confusion lies. So that's who I'm targeting right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, how would you define sensuality? I mean, we have so many sisters
mm-hmm.
who are walking around half-dressed.
Yes.
I mean, you see the thongs, you see,
right.
You know, the really low slung hip huggers, you see body parts everywhere, you know.
Yes.
Well, what would you say sensuality is?
Sensuality is the feeling more than anything, I believe. When I started my line, I marketed as sensually modest woman's wear. I was one of those women who dressed modestly, you know, the three quarters of the body covered, and most of the sisters I knew were in that same, coming from that same base. And so my line was kind of marketed in that direction. As my line has developed and grown, the concept has changed somewhat, but it still does embrace the whole sensually modest piece. But the concept has changed and grown into a more conscious dressing for the healing, nurturing, and beautifying of the woman's sacred body temple. So there's a consciousness that is brought out to the forefront in my marketing of my line. So to answer your question about sensuality, it's the feeling, it's the subtleness of our energies being revealed as woman and being displayed as woman. It's not necessarily the exposure of flesh that makes it sensual, but just the everything unseen and felt. So it's the confidence that we walk with. It's the knowledge of self that we carry. It's the nurturing of our feminine energy that's kind of felt mm-hmm. when we drape ourselves in clothing that is reflective of our culture or of our self-expression. It's all those subtle things, more so than the out-and-out exposure of flesh or, you know, the honey hugger, so to say.
Right. Well, you talk about the healing, and I can't say that I remember ever talking to any designers who spoke about the healing aspect of their work. I mean, that is tremendous. Why don't you talk to us a little more about that?
Yes. There are two passions that I carry with me in this life. One is the fashion, everything about fashion design and interior design and that whole arena. The other passion, though, is the healing on an emotional level, physical level, as well as the whole metaphysics and holistic healing. That plays a very, very important role in my life. And so I was, for years, I kept them separate. My degree is in home economics and diet and nutrition, so I embraced that on one level and studied iridology and metaphysics and all those healing forms. Mm-hmm. And another side of me was fashion, which was a gift. I never went to school to learn how to design and create. It was just something that Creator instilled in me at a very, very young age, and I've been nurturing it ever since I was about 4 or 5.
Oh,
and
what
so,
a blessing.
Yeah, it's
oh,
been a
now your
journey.
Fashions then are truly divinely inspired.
Yeah, I can't get rid of them if I wanted to. So, but for years I didn't see how to merge the two. But it was interesting because I reached a point on my journey where I was designing and the clientele was really flourishing and really nurturing the designs and my energy, but there was something missing, and I couldn't place it. There was something missing, mm-hmm. and my soul wasn't satisfied in creating the pieces. I had the clientele, I had the designs, but something was missing in that arena. Mm-hmm. My soul was not satisfied, and it's because there was another element that divine spirit and universe wanted me to merge with my designs that I wasn't quite seeing, and that was the whole healing aspect of clothing. And as I toiled around with it and sat back and restructured and all those changes I went through with my line, I started to find how to mesh the two together. Mm-hmm. And so when I speak about the healing qualities of clothing or the healing, the concept of the healing and nurturing and beautifying, we're talking about the feng shui element of the clothing construction. We're talking about soft lines and how that heals the body instead of becomes obtrusive to the body. We're talking about colors mm-hmm. and how colors either subdue or enhance our own qualities, our own energy fields, and how powerful color is mm-hmm. in creating our field around us. Even with the clothing line, as of recently, this past year, I it was Simply Nepha boutique, and it changed and it evolved into simply a holistic boutique, because what I found was that what the sisters and my clients were responding to when they would embrace my pieces or select pieces from me or come towards me to receive custom orders and things like that, it was the concept. It wasn't just the clothing. It was the concept of Simply Naphtha. So it was not, it wasn't just the attire, it was the jewelry. Mm-hmm. It was the gems, which also carry healing qualities. Mm-hmm. It was the fragrances that surrounded me at times, or even the home shows I had. So it was what we put on our bodies. It was what we wore. It was what we adorned ourselves with, and all of them had healing qualities to it. And so Simply Enough for the clothing line, it grew into a concept, thus the healing, nurturing, and beautifying of the woman's sacred body temple. And it's been a beautiful journey and transformation that's continuing.
Well, you truly are a wonderful example of what it is that you are bringing in terms of concept that you said everybody is really interested in, because mm-hmm. I mean, I know that when I first saw you, I was like, oh, this is a queen. Truly, because you walk with this with power. It's a quiet mm-hmm. power and assurance, mm-hmm. and with this style, like, yeah, this is who I am.
And it's so funny you say that, Mu, because I've said this since the beginning. It's I'm humbled when women such as yourself bear that response from me or towards me, or when you see that. But at the same time, I say it's you, it's the woman that I designed for that are the inspiration behind my pieces, truly. And when I sit down and I create, it's the woman that wear my pieces, it's the woman who carry this power, this resilience, this energy around them that inspire my pieces truly. And it's you, women like yourself, and other women who actually bring out the pieces for me. I mean, y'all do the work. I just put it on y'all, but y'all really bring it out. And so when I get these callbacks and these responses, it's just affirmations. I'm on the right track, that I'm doing the right thing. You know, y'all keep me in line and let me know that I'm on the right track, really, and I'm doing the work, you know. Mm-hmm. And so in that respect, I'm truly humbled, and that's how I receive it, truly.
Well, give thanks. That's kind of you to say. And I must say also that the fact that you are an entrepreneur mm-hmm. is inspiring, and I'm sure you have mm-hmm. a lot of sisters who say to you, how did you do this? What words would you give to our audience right now? Because, you know, there are many who I'm sure are teetering back and mm-hmm. forth as to whether they want to take the leap into mm-hmm. entrepreneurship. So why don't you tell us about your journey and what you would recommend?
Wow. Yeah, because catch me on a given day, you know, I might be talking about trading all in, but I think
I
at the base of it,
that
keeps me in it and moving forward is this undeniable and surprisingly to myself, unshakable belief in myself and my sense of purpose and what I'm doing. And that is the bottom line. I mean, it's not an easy road. I'm a single mother, and I also care for an older sibling. And it's definitely been some days where I've definitely doubted whether or not I was on the right path. But there is an undeniable sense of purpose in what I'm doing that keeps me in it. And I truly believe that where the passion lies, it is where we're meant to move forward on. Mm-hmm. You know, despite the challenges we meet along the way, it really has to do with how you embrace those moments. I've learned through trial and error and things like that to take each stumbling block and make it a stepping stone mm-hmm. to change each doubt into faith, mm-hmm. and move forward in that direction. And in doing so, I'm still here. I mean, I've been doing this since 90, mm-hmm. and I'm still here. And each year, I'm grown more and more. And it's a slow process for me, but my journey was meant to be a slower process. It was not meant to be a quick rise up. Mm-hmm. And so I accept that, and that's what keeps me in it. And it's really, truly, I go back, it's the sisters, and it happens every time. At those moments when I start to doubt whether or not I can still do this, there's definitely been times where the capital hasn't been there or changes have had to be made, and you have to be flexible. That's one thing. You have to be open to a different way of doing things, and definitely have a clear a clear concept of success and failure, what that really means to a person, you know, to yourself.
Well, what does that mean to you? Because, you know, many people have different ideas of what success is and what
right.
failure is, and a lot of people are frightened of failure.
Sure, I'm one included. I had that fear of success, failure thing running through my blood, but what I've learned is that failure only occurs when you don't try.
Mm.
It only occurs when you don't try. When you try and you don't succeed in what you tried at, you still succeeded, you just didn't succeed the way you wanted to, and so it's time to take another approach, and that's what that experience is meant for you to learn from. But failure, in my mind, is just when you don't try at all.
Mm-hmm.
That's really the only way you can fail,
mm-hmm.
and everything else is becomes a learning experience and an opportunity to grow and redefine yourself or restructure or do it differently or do it better or fine tune yourself, and so it's a learning experience. And it instills a confidence in you,
mm-hmm.
so because you're really depending on yourself, you're resting with yourself,
mm-hmm.
and so it instills the confidence that carries you through. And it's the sisters who, at those moments when I'm thinking this is not meant, I'll get a call from a sister who just is delighted with the piece or just, has something wonderful to say that keeps me, just kind of sets me back on track, and I give thanks to them.
Those calls come at just the right time.
Just the right time,
right?
Yes. Yes. So basically, enough, just the belief in yourself that really, for any entrepreneur, anyone thinking to pursue a hobby that they kind of downplay it as a hobby and just really pursue it, is a belief in yourself. And it amazes me. I look around and you see these professions, we were talking the other day, a couple of sisters and I, about, I forget the guy's name who did Lifestyles on the Rich and Famous.
Oh,
and he made a lot of money and a lot of success on himself going around talking about rich people.
Yes, he did.
You think about these careers that people have, or people who, or the ones who go around and taste food, and food critics,
mm-hmm.
and have very successful, wealthy lives out of tasting food and traveling all over the world, and
you're saying,
well,
what they think,
right, basically. But it's a sense of self and purpose that is reflected off of them that gets them there. And we have to believe more in ourselves and value our gifts and our potentials. And it's not always the easiest thing, especially.
I'm sure that there is a great deal of discipline that you have had to really stress and bring forth in your life in order to make your dreams a reality.
Yes, yes. As an entrepreneur, you have a lot of freedom to either put work forward towards the day or lay around all day. But it's, in the end, it's what you make it. When people ask me, "How's my business? How's it going?" my answer is always, "It's what I make it," because essentially that's what it is. There are days where I'm lazy and I don't, meet my own goals and things like that, aspirations for myself, and then I make up for it another time. But when you're moving off a sense of purpose, then there's a responsibility, something higher than you that gives you that discipline, that keeps you focused and keeps you moving forward. Each day, if I do, you know, my goal, and it's funny because I was just sitting down here doing this questionnaire about, you know, your purpose and things like that, and I make a requirement of myself is to each day, no matter if it's big or small, do something towards the obtainment of my goals. Whether I have a show that day or whether I'm waiting for business to come through, each day do something in that direction and keep that a discipline.
Tell us about some of the fashion shows you've done.
Oh, well, I have one coming up Saturday. It's actually a benefit for the Asiatic AIDS Coalition, I believe it's called. It's called Fashion Forward. It's an annual benefit they have in Philly in support of AIDS, and it's sponsored by an Asian coalition community. That's a really big benefit. This is my second year doing it. I was actually sick last year, so my designs were there, but I wasn't. But this year, it's always a fun affair. I've also been invited to do Miramie Sisterhood Fashion Show they have every year. And so this past year was my second year doing that. And that's been a wonderful, wonderful arena.
And that's
for
with Baba
me.
Sekou's temple, the Yoruba temple out in
right.
Miami, the Ile Iwa Pele, the House of Gentle Character. Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes. There were several shows, the Fashion Awards. I was a recipient of the Fashion Awards up in New York. They used to have every year in the Village.
Mm-hmm.
Very eclectic, very, you know, Soho-y, villagey.
Mm-hmm.
Fun, you know, it's always interesting. Mm-hmm. The fashion shows are always, always interesting. They're hectic and they're intense, but they're quick. And they're just an opportunity to showcase your pieces, really. And
well, what is that like for you behind the scenes?
Behind the scenes, especially in a fashion show, it's just very quick. It's very quick and very intense. But I try to keep it as leisure as I can, despite the environment, because the environment just is truly against that. But it's fun. Bottom line, it's fun. I do them selectively now. I used to do them a lot in the early years of my business, but right now I'm very selective on them because it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work, and it's very intense for the 2 hours or 3 hours that you're back there. I rarely get a chance to even see my pieces showcased at fashion shows because you're back there with the models and trying to get them to present it properly. So the rarity you actually get to see your fashion show. That's the part I missed about it.
Well, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Because, you know, people just see the models come out on the runway and
yeah.
you know, strut their stuff. And
yes.
And usually if there is more than one designer and they mm-hmm. all have their own models, then,
mm-hmm.
You know, it must really be at times chaotic backstage.
Yeah.
But, I mean, just from a practical standpoint, can you just tell me what is that like? I mean, do you keep sequestered to your own area? You know, how does that work? Really, how does it work?
Yeah,
and
it really
also,
depends.
Is there a rehearsal process? How do you select your models?
Right. It depends on who's doing the fashion show and how much control they give the designers for that forum. For instance, Miramie Sisterhood, they give you a lot of control over how you want to present your fashion show. I think maybe for myself more so because I was an invited guest, it was very, I had a lot of creative control.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing I do enjoy a lot about fashion shows is the opportunity to create this scene and ambience. And so my shows have become known, or I should say my segments in shows have become known simply because of that, because of how I put the music to the models and the message I'm trying to get across. There's always a theme. There's always...
Give us an example.
Okay, for example, Miramie Sisterhood Show last year, I usually use my own models who are clients of mine,
mm-hmm.
and they are wonderful, wonderful to me. They model for me freely. You know, they just want to be that for me, and I'm so humbled by that. And so it helps me, obviously, because they just want to model, so that that comes across when they're out there on the runway. So that was the first year I did it, and that theme was, I was told by the Sister Ia, who was organizing the event, that there was going to be women in the audience who were coming from transitional settings. I think they were coming from like welfare into higher economic setting, and some of them were coming from rehab centers, and so they were going to be seeing this side of us, so to say, kind of for the first time or in a certain light. And so I honed in on that, and the theme for that year was, I had was liberation. And so I had a sister model who, the scene was that they were in Africa, and the woman, the model, was a peasant, and she was selling her wares, and she was of the lower standard of living. So she would be out in the village and selling her wares to all these models, well, women, and who would come past and buy her fruit or her flowers. And they were always dressed, you know, a little bit better, a little bit more elegant, a little bit more queenly. And she couldn't relate, you know, and she showed that, you know, the way I had the model do it, you know, I had to kind of dress a little more drab. And she kind of, you know, was more humbled and da-da. So the scene goes on, and they have the models coming by and buying the foods, and she's kind of like, nah. And then at the end, because the sisters who were buying the fruit from her always saw her as a queen, but she never saw herself in that light. And so they, at the end, gave her a gift, and the gift was a lapis set that was royal. It was red, and it had a white embroidery through it. It was absolutely beautiful, and I made the piece very strong to bring that out. And so the scene, and then I had to put some music that was climatic. So you had this escalation, and people kind of waiting to see what's happening. So the sisters come out, and there's about five of them. They come out to give her this gift, and she was refusing it because she felt like, you know, she wasn't deserving, that this, you know, it just wouldn't fit her. And they're insistent, and they remove her clothing. They kind of circle around her to give her that protective edge, and they remove her clothing and adorn her in this royal wear. And she comes out, and she's this queen, the same woman, but something changed. Mm-hmm. Something changed in that moment for her.
That is so powerful. Oh, my goodness.
It was a very, you know what, I have to say, now I didn't get to see the scene, as I said, but I heard the response from the, and there were tears from a lot, I didn't even expect it. I didn't know it was going to affect them that way.
That speaks to the heart of the condition of many of our people.
Yes.
You know, I was actually in discussion with a couple of folks today about that very notion that,
yeah.
I mean, that's one thing I should also say that I really appreciate about your pieces also, because whether they're casual or whether they're for an after five event or for office, there is always this sense of the upscale.
Okay, right.
And that is not something that is a foreign concept to us, that is not outside of our reach, that this is the way that it should be.
Right.
That we should aspire for the finer things in life, for more, you know.
Right.
And, I mean, like I said, really, I mean, that is really what has come through. But we, as a people, have become so indoctrinated to the idea that we can only attain so much, that we can only go so far, and have a tendency to look down upon our brothers and sisters who do have more, or who even carry themselves in a way that tells the world that you need to respect this, because I respect and love myself.
Right. Yeah, there's definitely a dismantling and there's a brainwashing that's over us that we are definitely, I'm definitely purposeful, and just really changing the mindset. It is imperative. And so even like when I'm speaking about holistic dressing or sacred dressing or body image or self-esteem when I'm doing these workshops or creating these showcases, the continual mindset behind it is the healing and liberation. Mm-hmm. And I use that word constant, liberation, of our mindset, of to change that, to dismantle a lot of that. Even like we were just talking briefly on the fashion shows, I mean, when there's an opportunity for model calls, that's when models come in to wear your pieces. There are many times when the sisters are just way too skinny. You know, because they're striving to fit that image, that European mindset of what beautiful is and what our body types are supposed to look like, and it's horrific. It is horrific what we're doing to our bodies to fit this image. And there's definitely, as far as I'm concerned, a need for me to help dismantle the mindset of what beautiful is. Mm-hmm. What beautiful is, what defines beauty, and what makes us beautiful. And it's certainly not 100 pounds. Mm-hmm. 100 pounds. And,
well, now,
you know,
you're a slender sister, but you don't look sickly. You look healthy. You look fit, you know?
I am. And you know, and I know, even, because I know both of us are kind of trim. Mm-hmm. And I know for some sisters, when I'm saying what I just said about sisters embracing their body structures or changing the way they view themselves from being fat to being full figured, and there's definitely looks that I'll get, you know, from sisters, like, girl, see, you can say that because you're skinny, you know. And I understand that, I overstand that, but yet and still, I'll continuously replace that word or that mindset just to keep it going, because we need to. And so when my models come out, so my models, I have a range. I have the full figure sister. I have the voluptuous woman. I have the trim sister. I have that range there. I have the dark skin, you know, I have the fair skin. And they're all beautiful. Mm-hmm. And they're all beautiful. You know, and I just really, when I have the opportunity to do fashion shows, that is what I purposely bring out, you know, put out on the runway.
That's wonderful.
So that people can see that this is beautiful too. It doesn't have to be all skinny, mini, and thick, and straight hair, and tons of makeup, and, you know, mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be that. That does not have to be what defines beauty.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, yeah, because truthfully, there were some sisters that were kind of hating, you know, on me because of the fact that I have a small frame, you know.
Right,
and
yeah.
In my family, too. Finally, you know, I met an elder in my family who was my size.
Okay.
And I said, is that the way you've been all your life? And she said, all my life. And so mm-hmm. I said, okay, here's my proof, okay?
Right, right.
You know, I mean, this is the way that I'm supposed to be, you know.
Right.
But that doesn't take away from the rest of my family, you know, who
right.
all come in different sizes, you know. I mean,
right.
I used to consider myself the runt of the litter, you know.
Right.
You know, they really try to make me feel bad, you know.
Right.
But in being able to accept who you naturally are.
Right.
I mean, if you look at my daughters, I mean, they're both gorgeous young women. And
mm-hmm.
one is, she's smaller than I am, but she's got more shape, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then my other one, my other daughter is built so that she's got more meat on her bones, you know.
Okay.
And she carries that like a queen. That's what
yes.
that's her natural frame.
Yes.
And so, yeah, it really is important for us to be able to embrace who we are
mm-hmm.
in totality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, without trying to fit those European images. Because even with that, for those of us who are naturally small, there
mm-hmm.
are many who try to diet down to mm-hmm. that concentration camp look, which is truly not
yeah.
healthy.
Yeah, I tell you, they're going for it. And the last model call I had was for the show coming up. I had to pull some extra models, and I had a really hard picking. I mean, even the brothers were like pushing 100, 120. Oh, so
goodness, what?
I'm serious.
Oh, no.
I was like, goodness, what am I doing with you? What? You know? So yeah, there's definitely, like I said, it's a dismantling that has to be based on what defines beauty. And a lot of it has to start on the inside. It does. And how we feel about ourselves. And I have two sisters I'm thinking off the top of my head who I use continually. And they're full figure sisters, but they are just as comfortable and as they really embrace their power, their feminine power, and their feminine sensuality, and it is wonderful. It does a lot for other sisters who are in their category, weight wise, build wise, and it inspires other women to look at themselves differently, and then really with this forum or this arena that I'm in with Fashion Arena, I have the opportunity, which is wonderful, and I see how it's divinely set up so that I have these gatherings with tons of women. And so what started out as just, okay, I'm having a home show, let me bring the sisters through and let them select some clothes, I found an opportunity and a forum to use that as a base to do these workshops and to start talking about these things and about body image and health and you know, what defines a healthy body and what defines a healthy sense of self. And it was just a divine opportunity to have that dialogue and to dismantle some of that and just to have that exchange among sisters. You know, it's the home shows that I do, we just didn't mention that, we talked about the fashion shows, but I also do the home shows. It's a wonderful opportunity for sisters to gather and reason and exchange and grow and learn and heal and discover. So it's becoming a very all-encompassing type of arena, more so than just getting some clothes and buying some clothes for yourself, you know.
So what happens with the sisters when they are there? Because, you know, there has been talk for the longest time of the splintering of the sisterhood within our community.
And that's real. That is real.
Speak to us about that.
Yeah, what we do, we have, there's definitely some issues among us, and I don't even know where to begin with that, but I know that I've been given the opportunity to play a role in seizing some of it and healing some of the discord, just on a minute level, on a one-person level. So oftentimes when we have the home shows, whether it's something that I'm hosting or whether another sister's hosting it at her house, because I'm presenting the clothing and doing the fashion shows, I'm given a natural podium. So I've used that podium to open dialogue about body image and sisterhood.
Well, what are the issues that come to the fore when sisters start talking, as far as what is on our sisters' minds, as far as why there is discord amongst us?
Oftentimes, the dialogue that comes up is centered around concepts of beauty. Light skin, dark skin, straight hair, curly hair, nappy hair. You know, so, and it's in those little subtle adjectives or descriptions that you pick up some of the bigger issues. So, for instance, if one sister has a garment on and another sister says, well, she can pull it off because she's so light-skinned, or, you know, that color, you kind of see, okay, well, there's an issue here with the light-skinned, dark-skinned thing. Okay, so let's talk about this. What is that? What's going on with that piece? You know, where are we at with that? Why do we feel this way? How are we contributing to this separatism, you know, that's occurring within us, and how can we kind of remove that, you know? And or if it's not that, it's the hair, you know. Might be stuck, because a lot of times with the incorporation of natural body butters and hair products within Simply Enough for the line, Holistic Boutique, we have an opportunity to talk about hair and you know, how we can nurture our nationality, our backgrounds by natural hair, you know, and changing back to natural hair. We have perm. So there's an opportunity to start talking about hair. And then in that discussion, well, you know, my hair is all kinky. Okay, well, something in that, what you just said, tells me that you still have an issue with our natural curls and natural kinks in our hair. And so there's a dialogue, you know, opportunity for dialogue about that. So what I see more so in these arenas is not necessarily the judgment calls is not what rises up. That's usually on the subtle level.
Mm.
What does rise up is, like I said, dismantling of some of our concepts of beauty, and then a nurturing of our own natural beauty and finding out what makes us beautiful. One of the things I do in my workshop is I go around the room, and oftentimes, sometimes I'll have 5 sisters, sometimes I'll have 25 sisters, it really doesn't matter. But one of the things, one of the exercises that we do, or I do, is I have the sisters, we go around the room after the introduction of everybody, you know, name and, you know, something about yourself. I go around each person and I ask them what they like about themselves,
mm-hmm.
or what they love about themselves, what makes them beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always crunch time for some sisters. You know, you're going to get some sisters just not comfortable with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we just, some of us, we, and I know that place, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But my purpose is not to put anyone on the spot, but to kind of let down some of those guards that we have, or judgments we have, or fears that we have about embracing that side of us. What's wrong with saying that my teeth are beautiful? You know,
mm-hmm.
does that make me conceited? No. Okay, let's get that out of our mindset. You know, self-love has nothing to do with conceitment and I'm better than you. It has to do with nurturing ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to become more comfortable doing that. And once we become more comfortable doing that, then we can start to embrace these new concepts of beauty. And we can start to nurture our confidence and our feminine energy and our power and our uniqueness. They say many people are born unique but die as copies, because we just get
say that again, please, sister. That's deep.
Yes, many of us are born unique but die as born originals, I should say,
mm-hmm.
but die as copies.
Mm-hmm.
And it's true.
Mm-hmm.
So these gathering spaces, anytime there's a group of sisters, I'm always going to try to get in there and do something, you know, just open some dialogue up, have some reasoning. And so that's one of them. Another thing that we usually do, I have a dinner that I host every year. It's a sister-to-sister dinner, and I invite sisters, and each sister has to bring an elder.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yes, because, you know, we've got issues. We've got stuff we're working through. We've got, you know, families and children, and just all those things, personal relationships issues, all those kind of things that we're working through. And we oftentimes forget that, you know, we got elders who've been there, done that twice over, and can still, you know, offer a lot of guidance and ease a lot of our stresses just by dialogue. And so we have that, and that's been growing. This will be my 5th year doing it. And hopefully I'll have you there this year.
I will be there.
Yes, and it's a wonderful opportunity for sisters to meet and connect, and just to ease that age barrier, kind of bring it closer together.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things we do at that event often is go around the room, and sometimes there's it could be a group of sisters who don't really know each other, some of them do, and each woman has to put their name in a basket. The basket is shuffled up, and then each woman has to pick blindly a name from out that basket.
Mm-hmm.
And this is at the point where everyone's kind of familiar with putting the face to the name.
Mm-hmm.
And whether they just met a sister 5 minutes ago or knew her a lifetime, they have to write 3 things about that woman, that 3 compliments about that woman.
Oh, that's tremendous.
Right, and it's an opportunity to receive.
Mm-hmm.
To receive and not feel any kind of way about it,
mm-hmm.
not feel selfish or any kind of, you know, way about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the sisters get to take home that piece of paper with those 3 compliments on them.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, and it's, like I said, these are little things that we have to become more comfortable receiving these things and hearing these things and from ourselves and from other people. And it gives us, I believe, it allows for that breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
That breakdown from, you know, the sister talk, the catty stuff, all those little things that we do,
mm-hmm.
you know, on some level, this maybe helps to take some of that away. And if I can reach one person at a gathering, I know that one person will reach another person and another person, and that's how it works.
There
you
truly
know?
Is power in each one it teach is. One. There truly
yes.
is.
Yes.
You know, all of this reminds me of the Orisha Oshun. I have an awful lot of her energy, and so I speak about her whenever I can. I mean, I don't usually throw it on people, but like to just today, I was sharing with somebody about the different aspects of Oshun and mm-hmm. how people really get the concept of the energy and all of that. They get it wrong because people assume that Oshun is vain. You know, you have the whole
right.
thing with the mirror and her being extremely sensual and, you know, her loving clothing and the finer things in life. And the big thing is the mirror. Mm. People assume that she carries the mirror because of vanity. No. Actually, her mirror is a reflection. When you look into it, you see that your own beauty, or if you need to kind of get your spiritual beauty and physical beauty together. But the main thing is Oshun truly does love herself, but not for vain reasons.
Right.
She loves herself because she knows she is a divine reflection
right.
of the Most High. Therefore,
right.
the idea is like, yeah, I love myself.
Yes.
And I should. You know?
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, and even the kinds that we were talking about, you know, especially in society, as women, we're constantly bombarded by this idea that we had to be beautiful for our men or for these other people, for the world. And really, we have to kind of change that dialogue with ourselves and say to be beautiful before our man and before our mirror and
that's
before
right.
the
right.
world.
That, that's something I had to learn. I mean, because especially, I mean, I've been in marital relationships for most of my adult life, you know,
okay.
just until recently. And it's been most recently within this last year or so that I began to really just take pleasure in dressing up simply for myself.
Yeah, me too. You
know?
And I,
in
the same, but it took me some time as well.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I can be in the house here working all day, and I will be sitting here looking just as cute, you know, but I'm making my decision that I'm going to get
right.
up, I'm going to put on an outfit that pleases me and have the colors that really vibe with my energy for the day,
yeah.
and put on my accessories, and not leave the house.
Yeah, and you know, I tell you, I was at the same place. Like, that's a recent growth for me as well, because I'm a creature of comfort, girl. And, you know, give me some sweats, you know, the t-shirt, I'm good. But then, as I started to become more comfortable with the concept, the idea of being beautiful before myself, you know, and it took a while, but yeah, it changed for me as well.
That healed me tremendously.
It
really did, you know, because
you're
right. It really has to start with self first,
yeah.
you know, and not being the attractive thing on somebody's arm, you
right.
know, and, you know, to please somebody else. And,
right.
It's, I mean,
right.
It's a huge step.
And you do, and how you embrace yourself and how you deal with yourself really determines what you draw to you. Anyway,
this is very true.
You know,
So
it behooves us
to
embrace that mindset, if for no other reason than to keep our circle around us a certain way.
Well, let me ask you this: because of the fact that you are a businesswoman,
yes,
do you find that you are up against a lot of male energy, and how do you do that? Because you know, when we came through the 80s and a good part of the 90s. Women, well, actually it started with the 70s, where women really assumed that in order to get anywhere and stand toe-to-toe with men in the business world, that they had to become like men, you
right.
know, in their dress, in their attitude. You
yeah.
follow what I'm saying?
I do. And I felt that a lot when my foot was in corporate America. I don't feel it much here, Moo. And I tell you, I think... I don't feel the presence of that in this arena. At the same time, there's been few occasions where I've had to go before a male panel or a male centered environment, and even in seeking capital or loan, I haven't had too many of those experiences where I've had to meet their energy there at that place to really speak on any challenges or exchange, you know. But I know I was doing male, I had a strong male clientele base at one point, which I had to pretty much cease. One, because I wanted to embrace woman more and in that arena, but also because there was ulterior motives that I was finding were coming into play when I would have opportunities to work with male clients, most to say. Like, for instance, if I'm doing a show and a brother might come up to me and say he wants something made. Okay, well, it's a custom piece, and that means you have to get fitted for it. So I'm working out of my home. So more than likely, he's going to have to come to my gate to get fitted. I'm not going to go to his house. Once he's inside my gates, well, now it's personal. It's more intimate.
Yes.
Right? And there was definitely occasions where what I thought they wanted was not what they really wanted. But now you're in my gates. You're in my domain now. And you're in my personal world. So I had to cease that. Even though the clientele was good, and there was a demand for males, you know, they love custom pieces, and there's definitely demand out there for that. But because I was working out of my home, that no longer became a comfortable situation for me.
Well, that was wise that you were able to become hip to that, and that you put restrictions on that avenue of your life, not only because of the fact that you are a woman, but I'm sure you took your family into account too.
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely. And it just, like, nothing that I'm doing here, of course, obviously, because I'm a businesswoman, there's a part of this that is centered around economics. Yes, I want to make money. I'm a businesswoman. That's what I do. But not at the expense of invasion of my space or even the safety of myself or my family. You know, it never was the issue of, okay, I need the money, let me just do, you know. And that's never been the motivation behind what I'm doing. And so it was easy to let it go. It was easy to say, you know what, until either I have another setup that is more conducive for this type of thing, or something changes, I'm going to let go of the male custom orders. Just take that as a picture for a minute.
You mentioned about raising your son.
Yes.
And also you have an older sister that you were taking care of as well.
Yes.
And so how is it that you were able to balance all of that? I'm sure that that's challenging too.
It is. I don't know how I balance. I balance on a day-to-day basis. I've had to learn, and it took me a long time to learn this, but for a long time I kept, you know, we're supposed to have a priority list. You know, what comes first, second, third, and it's supposed to be in a vertical format, but mine would go horizontal, so everything was top priority. My sister, my son, my business, my social, blah, blah, blah. And I became burnt out very quickly and repeatedly, you know, just because I'm very resilient and very, you know, just I keep striving, but that's the right thing. But
how did you go about restoring your life force?
Well,
I mean, you know, I
usually had to break down before that.
Right.
So that's what happened. I broke down. I broke down and I had to restructure. And in restructuring, I found myself at the top of the list, okay, of priorities. Where I had a hard time with that before because I kept equating self-love with self-centeredness. You know, I had that mistaken. I wasn't clear on that. And so I found to put myself first, because that's another thing in being an entrepreneur, and you know, I'm sure, is that it's very easy to overwork yourself.
Yes.
It's very easy to just keep going, you know, past your point of limitation, and you really have to set your own boundaries. That's going to keep you going, but it's very hard because you have to kind of stay. You have to really work a little harder. You know, you don't have the security set up, and that's one thing that discourages a lot of people from the entrepreneurial arena, is there's not that sense of security of a steady paycheck each week or every 2 weeks, or in many cases, benefits, medical insurance, you know, all those things that we as humans need to feel secure with, mm-hmm. they're not there. So you find yourself working overtime and, you know, just hustling a little bit more.
Right.
And it's very easy to burn out
mm-hmm.
If you don't set your own boundaries up. And in me finding myself, I had to kind of lose myself a little bit along the way.
Mm.
You know,
How do you mean that exactly?
I mean, we're creatures of habit, and we do things out of habit. But when the outside world, the outside forces are changing, or you know, new things are coming into play, whether it be your son going into school or having difficulty in school, or maybe your business having to change its location or its structure, then you are required to change and become flexible to meet those outside forces, and so that you can still move through it effectively. And that's what I was saying earlier on about the need to be flexible when you're an entrepreneur, just to be able to survive and to move through it and grow.
So when you're saying losing mm-hmm. yourself, it sounds like you're talking about losing the, or letting go of the concept that you had of yourself, and looking at yourself in a different way in order for you to adapt.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Allowing yourself to change and to view yourself or the world in a new way, in a different way, in order to meet the changes that the world is requiring you, or even the universe is requiring you to go through,
mm-hmm.
whether it be in your business or your personal life.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be able to change yourself or to grow. You know, the growing pains is what they call them.
Mm-hmm.
And allow for yourself, like I'm speaking about dismantling concept of beauty, but even our concept of ourselves, who we are. At some point in our life, who we are is not who we thought we were, and it changes. And you have to, and you have to be able to change without judgment on yourself. You know, just to be able to move forward and survive it, I guess to say.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I say you have to lose yourself, I'm speaking exactly on what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Just who you thought you were, or just changing yourself to meet the changes of outside forces around you.
Mm-hmm.
And what the universe wants you to do, you know, what it's requiring of you at that time.
Before I let you go, I'd like to ask
yeah.
you in terms of our people, you know, we spend all this money
yeah.
in the European sector.
Oh, yes.
But we are reluctant to support our own.
Yes.
And have you seen any change regarding that? And also, what would you recommend in terms of helping to change our mindset so that we can be more supportive of one another economically?
Okay. So have I seen much change in it? In pockets, I've seen changes. I've seen us really trying to make an effort to support each other in pockets.
Mm-hmm.
Nowhere near where we need to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think convenience and economics. I mean, we just, you know, this is a constant. You know, this is a constant struggle we have in our community.
Yes.
Because the answer is so simple, but yet it's so complex.
Mm-hmm.
It's so simple because we could change. We could change our economic status. We could change pretty much the whole infrastructure by simply releasing our buying power from the European sector
mm-hmm.
and just supporting each other.
Yes.
We really can. In an instant, we can.
Mm-hmm.
But because of our own sense of me, myself, and I, this belief that we had to survive on our own, like all these individualized beliefs that they put out there,
mm-hmm.
it really prevents a lot of unity. And that's really all it takes is a unification.
Mm-hmm.
To seize hold of this market and all that good stuff. So I haven't seen the changes that I would like to see, but I see them in pockets, and that's something. You know,
mm-hmm. progress is always good, whether it's in pockets.
Progress
or,
is always
you know.
Good.
Mm-hmm.
It always is. The second part of your question, I think I know one thing we have to stop being afraid of is our power.
Mm-hmm.
I think many of us are afraid of our power.
That's true.
And because we're afraid of our power, we don't embrace and nurture ourselves the way we could or should. I did a workshop a couple of weeks ago through Prola Africa for African Liberation Day. And it was about the same topic, about creating our own and the benefits and the challenges and all that. And one of the things I noticed is that many of us have these gifts, these hobbies, that we just call them hobbies for now because we haven't really taken them seriously. But they're passions of ours. But they are also our outlet to economic growth and stability. And if more of us embraced it and took it seriously, and we would start to see the changes that we're looking for when it comes to supporting each other, because we would be less reliant on other people, outside sources, of Europeans, and more confident in our own ability to sustain ourselves and to create those very same things that we are in turn buying from other people. I mean, if we only could trust each other a little bit more and realize our power. That word keeps coming by. Realize our power. We would see the kind of changes that we essentially want, you know, for ourselves.
Like the concept that you have. That you had in that fashion show with the woman who was reluctant to accept her regality, but eventually did.
Yeah. So that's my hope, you know. And I'm constantly at every opportunity encouraging anyone to nurture their gifts, because when you start to nurture them, you start to believe in what you possess, and there's a confidence that grows out of that. There's a faith that grows out of that, and that takes you somewhere. That takes you places, and it takes you to the next level. That's an inspiration to me. That is what we need.
Sister Nefer, how is it that people can get in contact with you?
I have a studio number that they can reach me. There's, and I'll give you that in a moment. We're also putting together our website. It's going to be an info site at the beginning. You can get a glimpse of what Simply Nefer is about, what we have to offer. And then down the line, it'll be an ordering format. But so that is in creation now. Inshallah, we'll have that available this fall, this season. So in the meantime, I can be reached at studio. It's 267-918-6079. And I'll just reiterate some of the items we have. We have clothing. We have body butters and body scrubs, hair oils. We have handmade jewelry and semi-precious stones. And all of them have a healing quality to them. All of them have a healing force to it, and very nurturing energy about the pieces. Everything is us also. You know, it's all created by us. The body butters, all created by this, actually created by one of the sisters in Philly, Maitri Johnson. She does the body butters for Simply Nefer. And Rob Matunda is a brother out of Philly who does some of the jewelry. Dietrich Brown, another sister out in D.C. who does some of the jewelry for Simply Nefer. So we have that going on. You know, you trust that whatever you find here is for us, by us, you know, with that love and with that energy instilled in it.
And that jewelry is eclectic power jewelry.
Isn't it?
It truly is.
Well, you've seen, right.
I've seen some of the pieces that you've worn. I mean.
Oh, I tell you, and what's beautiful about Simply Nefer Polish Boutique is that it's not all done by me, and it doesn't have to be. You know, I much prefer it to have these different energies. There's a brother who does my jewelry. There's a brother, Russell Farrell, and Rob Matunda, who does the pieces, and they just all their energy goes into it. And those pieces are outstanding.
I can't think
of a time that I've worn any of the pieces and haven't gotten stopped regarding it. And they're very powerful pieces. Yes, they are very powerful.
Now, with the event that you have coming up, well, at least with a private event that you have coming up, I noticed that it is being catered by Heaven's Pantry.
Yes, yes. Ifaro Johnson, a sister out of Trenton, very beautiful sister,
yes,
very talented in the culinary arena. She's doing catering.
She does gourmet vegan food, right?
Right. It seems so. I've only had a sample of her work. She's wonderful. The passion that she has, and anything we're passionate about, you know, it just really, when we nurture it, it just does its own thing. It takes this place we didn't even think we would go. So yes, she's going to be providing the vegan and vegetarian refreshments for the event.
I understand that she even does a gourmet soul food.
Yes, she does. And I think I would expect to see something pop up probably in the Trenton area from her in the near future.
Well, that would be wonderful.
Yes, I'm looking forward to that myself. So we, you know, we had the space in Burlington for some time. When that went into transition, we said, you know what, let's keep this thing going. You know, I'm doing enough shows, and I don't cook, girl. You know, but she does. And I said, let's keep this thing going. And so we nurture each other's talents and gifts. And so if there's ever an opportunity where I'm hearing somebody needing some catering, I'm always quick to call her because I know that she's definitely going to present something wonderful for the palate and healing for the palate. Again, you know, we heal on many different levels. It's not just what we put in our body or put on our body, but also what we put in our body.
So
she's healing us from the inside. It's wonderful. She's very talented. Very young sister, very talented sister.
Well, I must say that you really have surrounded yourself with some powerful people. And, you know, the elder in my shrine said that her father, who was a Garveyite, used to tell her all the time, association calls for assimilation.
Okay.
And so basically who you surround yourself with is the energy you're going to take on. So that can be a positive thing.
Sure.
Or it can be a negative thing.
Right.
You know, so the question is, who is it that you are putting around you? Who is it you draw to you, you know?
Yes.
And you really seem to be drawing some very powerful, creative, progressive people to you, which is wonderful. I applaud you for that. And for the example that you're setting with that. And I also greatly applaud you because of the fact that you have come to a place of recognition where it's time to grow.
Yes,
you know, I mean, a lot of people are really afraid to step out on that whole changing piece, you know, and giving birth to something beyond what you had expected. And it's wonderful that you are doing that, you know, because when that happens, then miracles take place that you never even thought would happen.
Yes, I thank you too, Moose, for just reaching out to me this way and having me on your show. You're doing big things up. I stepped on your website the other day, and I think I shared with you the first time I wasn't able to get on it the way I thought I could. But I stepped on it the other day, sis, and I see what you're putting down too, and it's wonderful. I give thanks for just our connection. And I'm not surprised that we connected at all.
Oh, that's
I just
nice
give thanks, though. I truly do.
It all comes together, and
we all
need to support each other.
Yeah, and that's just on a quick note. That's another thing. I think a lot of us, we're concerned about our direction and where we're going as a people, and the signs around us, and where we're headed, and things. And one of the things I must say that I have an opportunity because of the work I do, I've had an opportunity to see the sisters coming together. And there's a universal calling, I believe, that is out there.
You're right.
And it is requiring us to come together, and it is enabling us to come together on a much higher level than we are even aware of. And it's forcing us to grow and heal and nurture and embrace, and in doing so, it's allowing for our families to also undergo a transition. You know, when the woman heals and liberates, so does her counterpart,
her male counterpart,
and so does her children and her and then in turn her community, and then in turn the nation. And so, just as we're looking around us and we're seeing the signs of the times, and it seems so chaotic and you see a slow demise and a breakdown in the family and the community, and it can be kind of challenging to see. But at the same time, there's this other force that's counteracting on the same level, but maybe not as openly as what the media portrays and what society seems to reflect.
Yes.
But there's another work at hand here, and it's very, very, very encouraging.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm blessed to be able to bear witness and to play a part in it. And it's just wonderful. So I just wanted to put that out there.
Well, you have recognized your role as a healer, and
yes.
you have
mm-hmm.
embraced it. And
yes.
that's tremendous. You know, there are a lot
yes.
of people who would shirk at the responsibility, because it is an awesome responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that the universe and the Creator just manages to find these truly creative ways for
mm-hmm.
the healing to come through
mm-hmm.
is amazing. And
yes.
you are one of those creative healers.
Yes, thanks.
Sister Nefa Amina Afia, thank
yes.
you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
And we hope to speak to you again in the future.
Okay, good, thanks.
Shemotep.
Sister Nefa Amina Afia, or simply Nefa, as her business is called. You know, Nefer in the Kemetic language means beautiful. And truly, not only is her work beautiful, but the sister is beautiful. She is a strong, progressive, and yet humble sister who carries a quiet strength with her and an elegance. And you just see Africa all over her. It's definitely the voice in the face of new Africa, the new Africans that we are in this country. And if you want to be able to get a hold of that number, again, you can simply go to the Akeru Radio website, where most of you who are listening actually came into this station, and go to the Ujamaa page. That's Ujamaa. And that is the page in the site which shares many people who have initially sponsored the station. Also, just some good folks for you to know. Supporting black business is what Ujamaa is about. Most people know it through Kwanzaa, the one day of the week where we focus on black business. But we truly need to focus on supporting our own year-round, so that it's not just a Kwanzaa thing. I mean, once upon a time, we had a lot of our own businesses. We kind of lost the way after integration. But Simply Nefa is there at that website, along with Heaven's Pantry. So just check them out. Give them support. You know, also, you can write in and share what you think. If you have guest ideas, if you have topic ideas, then please send them to the radio station website, the email that is there. What are you doing to make your life more progressive, and taking charge of your finances, taking charge of your community, taking charge of your household, taking care of and charge of your body temple? Make yourself commit to changing in at least one way, and there the journey will begin. I'm Reverend Mut Shekamethetep Ma'ati. The show is Ashe here on the Akeru New African Network. Shemotep, which means I leave you in peace.